Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome into the Playbook for Thursday on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. Eric Scalavino from PFW is down in the locker room because the availability today was a little bit different, simply because it's a shorter work week for the Patriots. So a little different practice schedule today, a little bit of a curveball, nothing huge. Eric will join us if he is able to do so before we are done here at 4 o'clock. But we've got a lot of stuff to get to, including that Andy Kent from Dolphins.com will join us in approximately 20 minutes here on the show to get us updated on the Dolphins and whether or not, Miami, we'll look at the intensity that Miami is trying to prepare for this game, because you have to feel like they're going to bring it. We talked about this on yesterday's show if you missed it, but they are bound to have, especially at the beginning, a little bit more focus, a little bit more intensity. I don't want to say desire, because I'm not sure that's the correct word here, but they're not going to lay down. They're not going to roll over. They don't have anything else to play for. They would like nothing better than to screw up the Patriots' world. That's what the Dolphins and the Bills next week have left to play for this season, because they won't be in the postseason. And sure, it'd be a nice little feather in their cap, as many of these guys who will be on the Miami sideline next Saturday, coming up in a couple of days, many of these guys will be looking for jobs elsewhere. You're getting ready to go through wholesale changeover in Miami with the Dolphins. Sure, some guys will stick around. A lot of guys won't. Be surprised if any of the coaches do, because you'll bring in an entirely different staff. I mean, it's going to be makeover city in Miami. So you can leave your last impression of playing for the Miami Dolphins, or at least one of your lasting impressions, well, you know what? We did beat the Patriots. So that's what they're shooting for. You wonder if the Patriots, at 11-3, currently sitting as AFC East champs for the ninth time in 11 years, as we've talked about, and with the fact that with two more wins, they will have the number one seed in the AFC playoffs, you wonder if that's enough. You wonder if that's enough. And that leads me to one of the things I wanted to talk about with you today. In a sense, you might say that this is a special edition of Nitpick Tuesday, but in a sense, we're not really picking nits on the current week. We're talking about general thoughts overall. I know many of you are familiar with the Seinfeld television show, and at this time of year, the guy that played George's father, and his name, Jerry, what was his last
name?
Jerry
Stiller.
Thank you, Jerry Stiller. Yeah, how can I forget Stiller, right? Ben Stiller's dad. Jerry Stiller came up with the holiday Festivus for the rest of us. And his big thing was the annual Festivus airing of the grievances. Do you remember that? Remember the show? All right, many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with that. Well, what I wanted to do today, because this is our last time to visit prior to the Christmas holiday, except, of course, for the pregame social on Saturday. I don't want to leave you guys out of the loop here. But for the playbook, our last time to visit before, you know, we get to the Christmas holiday, I wanted to have a special version of the airing of the grievances here. So airing of NFL grievances, airing of football grievances. Let's see if we can narrow the scope just a little bit, because I know we're all football fans. We all care about this game. We all follow this game. We all cover this game. That's why we're all here. This is why we all agree to meet. This is why we listen. This is why we talk. This is why we exchange views and opinions, no matter how silly. Everybody's got one, right? Okay. Football grievances. Today is the, we're going to mint a new tradition here. It is the Festivus airing of football grievances right here inside the playbook. And I'm going to start off, and I want you, you think of your football grievance, you can email the show, webradio@patriots.com. And, of course, the Ace Ticket Hotline is 508-298-0398. Area code 508-298-0398. You can air your grievance on the Facebook page. John Rook, R-O-O-K-E, is the last name spelling. If you're not a friend, submit the friend request. We'll answer that. And then you can chat and you can post and you can message if you like. And then the Twitter page, at J-Rook, J-R-O-O-K-E, 0722. Still need some Twitter followers. So bring it on, at J-Rook, 0722. I think mine has to be, and I've sort of alluded to this over the last couple of days, which is really, this is what led me to this. This is what led me to talking about this today. What are you laughing at? What did I say?
Yay! Happy Festivus, everyone!
Welcome, newcomers. The tradition of Festivus begins with the airing of grievances. I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
Excellent, Kevin. Excellent.
For those of you who aren't familiar, that's yes. Where it's from.
Excellent. All right. So it's our annual, it's going to be our newly annual airing of the grievances, Festivus airing of football grievances. So while you're coming up with your football grievance, and this can be Patriot-related, it can be NFL-related, it can be anything football-related, and I got several that I'm going to share with you, but I hope that you will chime in with your football grievance. My first one is the fact that you're an AFC East champion team. You're 2 weeks away from potentially clinching the top seed overall in the NFL or in the AFC for the NFL playoffs, and yet quiet, crickets, nothing, zero, zilch, no energy, no emotion, no real participation in the program. I mean, honestly, it's been dull this week. Nobody's fired up about Miami. Nobody seems to be happy that, you know, the game is being played on Christmas Eve. I don't quite get it. And I think that my major grievance with all of this is we're just too complacent. We're spoiled. We're spoiled rotten. We don't appreciate what we have. You know, you have to understand my perspective. I'm coming from the perspective of having grown up with football my entire life, having grown up in the state of Texas, having grown up a fan of the Dallas Cowboys, and having gone to the University of Texas and covered football in a state where high school football is religion. Football has meant a lot to me and to my family my entire life. And even though I've been very fortunate to have supported teams that have been, you know, wildly successful over the years, I have never, ever taken success for granted. And the reason for that is because, like a lot of athletes, I always feel like I am always striving for the best. Whether I'm rooting for them or whether or not I'm covering them, I'm trying to do the best I can possibly do every time out, just like the players down the hallway here are doing. They don't worry so much about, we've been here before. We've already beaten this Miami team by 14 points down in Miami. I'm just not fired up about it. Nobody in their right mind who's been through this thinks that way, except a lot of our fans do. And yes, I'm calling a lot of you out who are listening right now. You think that way. And that's a grievance. That's a real problem. We really take you. I'm not going to say we. I'm not going to be a part of this. You take this football team and their fortunes tremendously for granted. Now, as a fan, you have a right to do that. I'm not going to argue that point. But it is a grievance. I wish that more people and more fans would appreciate where this team is. 9 AFC East titles in the last 11 years. And yet all anybody wants to talk about is the fact that this team has not won a playoff game since beating San Diego in the AFC Championship in 2007. That's all anybody wants to talk about. That's been a central theme to the entire stinking year. So I wake me up, we get the playoffs, we can talk about finally winning a playoff game. Why not enjoy the ride during the regular season? Why not enjoy the week leading up to the Jets game, which I think we did a little bit? Why not enjoy the week leading up to the holidays with Miami, like right now, which we haven't done at all? I'm not happy with that. I'm really not. I think that's a legitimate gripe, a legitimate grievance, if you will. And, you know, my own personal feeling is that this team is underappreciated even by its most ardent fans. Dare I say, many fans don't deserve this team's success because they take it for granted. All right, give me your thoughts. Webradio@patriots.com. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Facebook and Twitter, up, running. Move to it. Let's go. Plus your own Festivus airing of the grievances as well here. So airing of the football grievances today. One of the things that we want to talk about. As far as the issues for the game on Saturday. Boy, see, you know. By the way, you know, what a weird day again. It's been a weird 2 days. Yesterday, I don't know what it was. I had a hard time just kind of clicking into gear. And then today, I left my phone at home. I don't have it with me. I have no means of communication. I feel naked without it. But in a sense, I also feel somewhat liberated without it. It's kind of like, wow, this is the old days. I mean, it's been, gosh, probably what? 13 to 15, 16 years or more, right around in that vicinity, since I've not owned a cell phone. It's been that long. We've talked about taking things for granted. I think we've taken communication for granted. And today, just because I've had a brain fart, and it's been going on for a couple of days now. Maybe it's just old age setting in. The senility is kicking in. I don't know. But I left it at home, and it was an accident, because naturally, if I'd thought about it, I'd have brought it with me, because my email's tied into it, and I like to stay up with that stuff, so I don't have to, you know, answer 55 emails at the end of the day, or more. Most of them are garbage anyway. Maybe you have to weed through all of them to get to the ones that really matter. And so, I don't know, maybe it's just a subliminal thing, but I left it at home today, and like I said, well, I know that, you know, I'll have hundreds of things that I've got to weed through when I get home. There's just something quietly liberating about not having it with you. It's like, oh, sorry, I can't do anything about it. Screwed up. Left the phone at home. Oh, trying to reach me? Sorry, can't get back to you. Left the phone at home. I may have to leave my phone at home more often. I don't know. I mean, is there really anything that is that important to where you got to answer it right now? I mean, what did we do in the days before we had cell phones? You had a home phone. You had a home line. A lot of us still do. Some of us don't. I don't have a home phone anymore. Why? Because I got my cell phone. And there's no need to have a home phone anymore. Especially when both of my kids have cell phones. There's no need. That's a needless expense. So I don't have a landline at home. I know a lot of people that don't have them either. Anymore, anyway. But some do. But what did we do before we had the cell phone? Well, we had a landline. What do we do during the day? Before we had answering machines. Can you remember? You remember the old answering machines? Had the old cassette tape in there. You know, leave a message, play at the beep, blah, 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 blah. You know. I remember all those days. Now there's no such thing as really an answering machine. If you have one, it's antiquated. You know, you usually use voicemail digitally, you know, through the home service phone provider that you have. Everybody that has a cell phone, you have the capability through your company, through your provider, for leaving a voice message. Through the voice message server. So there's no need for the machine anymore. What do? We waited until we got home. People talked in the evening, or they actually sent letters. There was no email. Gosh, that seems like ages ago, doesn't it? I mean, really, think about that. This may be another airing of the grievances here. I'm mildly upset, not entirely, because I know it's a necessity nowadays in this multitask world that we live in, but I'm mildly upset that we can't just dial it back a notch and appreciate what we have when we have it. Sort of ties into the whole football thing, doesn't it? Go home in the evening, phone rings a couple of times. Somebody that's really important to you, they're going to call. It's hard to believe that our, you know, we've sort of advanced as a society to the point now where you got to have your phone with you. Oh, I might miss that email. Oh, I might miss that text. Oh, I might miss that tweet. Want to stay up on it. Got to stay up on it. You know, in this ever-present need of society being up on things and not being kept out of the loop and knowing what the latest breaking story and news is and rumor and all that kind of stuff that's going on. You know, it's a Twitter world in which we lead. It's sort of somewhat comforting to know that, you know what, can't do anything about it. Left the phone at home. I'll have to get to it later. I mean, is there anything really that important that can't be answered or taken care of later? Stop. Smell the roses. Enjoy the football team. It's 11-3. It's at the top of the heap in the AFC again, regardless of what you hear anybody on ESPN or Fox or any of the other, you know, so-called sports expert networks say. The team is at the top of the heap. And just, you know, if, you know, some chucklehead on the four-letter network, you know, is dissing your Patriots, and, of course, you know who they are, just chuckle. Just laugh. Say Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. Because it's not worth getting all hot and bothered over. It's just not. The proof is going to be in the pudding. Sure, the Patriots haven't won a playoff game since 2007. We know. It's been an underlying theme to the entire stinking year. It's almost like we've been playing for, you know, we've been playing for 15, now we're getting ready for 16 weeks here. This team has been active, and yet it's all been window dressing for the main event, the main course, which is the playoffs, because everybody wants to see if this team can actually win a game that means something. I would argue that there have been at least a handful of games that have meant something this year to this team, that have been enjoyable to watch, regardless of this team's ability to stop anybody or score points or wherever you want to put it. You know, the home opener, I mean, excuse me, the season opener at Miami was an enjoyable game to watch because we didn't really know what was going to happen. Of course, everybody else in the NFL was the same way at the time. But I thought it was an enjoyable game to watch. Pleasantly surprised, the team won by 14. First Monday Night Football game of the year, that was special. I would argue that the first home game of the year against the San Diego Chargers, who at the time were thought to be a true Super Bowl contender, they could still, in a backdoor way, be that way. They're not eliminated with 2 weeks left here. But beating them by a couple of touchdowns as well, I mean, you're thinking, well, all right, maybe we got a little something here. It was a little disappointing in week three when you finally have a 75-game winning streak broken at Buffalo. But you knew that was going to happen sooner or later. You're going to throw up a stinker. It was certainly enjoyable to see the Patriots bounce back the next week at Oakland and then, of course, come back here to take on the Jets the following week after that and win. So, I mean, there have been some great, enjoyable weeks. I would argue early in the season has been great, and then as the season has progressed and we've gotten to the halfway point, you know, the focus has been, again, more on the fact that the defense stinks, that the defense is not championship caliber, and that there's no way that this team can possibly win a playoff game because the defense stinks. And as I've tried to spend the last couple of shows, and even the last week or two, sort of leading up to all this, the fact is that it's this way with just about every team in the NFL this year. This is a different year. Embrace it. This is not a typical NFL season. Offense rules. Defense drools. This is just the way it is. This goes against conventional football wisdom. I understand that. But here's another grievance for you. Why do we have to pay attention to conventional football wisdom? There's no reason to do that. None whatsoever. Fact of the matter is that this season is anything but conventional. You can make the argument that the last couple of years have been anything but conventional. Ever since we started really with the, you know, run and shoot and spread offenses, it's not conventional anymore. Eventually, defenses will catch up, and I think they've caught up a little more. Seems like they do a little bit more every year. That's because teams get younger and they get quicker and they certainly get faster on the defensive side of the ball, or they can, you know, defend empty backfield sets. Five wide. Shotgun. You know, where the quarterback has a head start of getting a look up the field. You remember back in the late 60s and early 1970s when a shotgun formation was heresy. But it was the old AFL that really made it popular. New York Jets, right? Some of you are old enough to remember that. Joe Namath, Daryl LaMonica, Oakland Raiders. Some of you guys remember that. And now it's the rule rather than the exception. So all I'm saying is appreciate it just a little bit. There's a lot there's a lot to be appreciative of this year with this team, knowing that it is a flawed team. And yet, they still find a way to win. Now, who do you give that credit to? Belichick? Maybe. Brady? Okay. Coaches? Maybe. Players? Certainly. Everybody. Everybody has a hand in it. Everybody has a hand in the success. Everybody has a hand in the ultimate failure. Now, if this team drops another one in the playoffs without getting a win, then obviously when next year rolls around, it's going to be a huge albatross around the necks of these guys. But you know what? We'll go through the same thing next year as we're going through right now. You got to play the regular season. You got to get through it all before you can even get to the postseason and have a chance to knock that off. You know, it's been that way for a couple of, you know, really superb franchises. It's been that way for the Dallas Cowboys. They've had a long time for a while there between playoff wins. Team like the Washington Redskins, which is floundering in mediocrity, and that may even be a stretch, you know, proud franchise. It's won Super Bowls. They can't get back to the promised land. Look no further than the Buffalo Bills, who went to four straight Super Bowls in a row. Didn't win a one, and certainly we rag on the Bills all the time around here. But the fact is they made four in a row. And they haven't sniffed the playoffs in a long time themselves. Miami is in a similar scenario. The Jets, for all their bravado, can't win the big one either. They've made the last two AFC championship games, still can't get to the big game, much to Rex Ryan's chagrin. All I'm saying is that there are a lot of teams and a lot of franchises out there who are a lot worse shape than yours is. Takes me back to the old adage, which I love going back to from time to time. You know, no matter how bad you've got it, there's always somebody else out there who has it worse. Makes me appreciate a little bit more what we have here. Makes me appreciate a little bit more what we've seen here and what we've lived through as people who follow the Patriots, cover the Patriots, and are fans of the Patriots. All right. We're going to break? All right, we're going to break. Let me give you an opportunity now to chime in yourself. It's the airing of sports, the airing of football grievances here on this Thursday edition of Patriots Playbook. 508-298-0398. Email us, webradio@patriots.com, on Facebook, on Twitter, around the world. And we'll have Andy Kent, Dolphins.com, coming up in just a moment.
All right, guys, ready for 2 weeks in the wild or what?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, then strap on those backpacks.
Hey, let me just check this text.
Oh, come on, man.
Oh, no.
What?
Not now.
What is it?
McRib is back.
What?
We're going to miss it.
This backpack just got really heavy, guys.
Everybody back in the car. We are going to McDonald's.
Yeah, good.
McRib is back for just $2.79. But that saucy pork goodness is here for a limited time.
What do you think? You guys want to do a golf trip instead, maybe?
That's kind of nature, isn't it?
Right? No.
The simple joy of big news. Price and participation may vary for a limited time.
Introducing the Droid Bionic by Motorola. So powerful it can access your home computer remotely and pull out your music, movies, images, and documents at the mind-melting speed of Horizon 4G LTE. The Droid Bionic. It's not only the master of droids, it's the master of machines. Control it, and you control everything.
Get the new Droid Bionic by Motorola and never sync with a cord again. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com/4GLTE.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you. From Boston sports to concert and theater, whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Be an MVP this holiday season and give the Patriot fan on your list a gift from the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop and PatriotsProShop.com have the widest selection of authentic Patriots merchandise on the planet. Everything from jerseys and sweatshirts to hats, t-shirts, autographed memorabilia, and more. The Patriots Pro Shop at Gillette Stadium is open Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Hey, Tom, what's on your holiday wish list?
Joy and happiness to all.
Oh, because I was thinking of giving you packaged coffee from Dunkin' Donuts.
Ooh, that's better.
Nothing beats Dunkin's packaged coffee. Right now, buy 3 pounds and get a fourth free. Only at Dunkin' Donuts restaurants. So give America's favorite coffee as a gift or stock up yourself. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Happy holidays, everyone! Glad you could make it to the house! Who's up for some Dunkin' coffee? Yeah. Grandma, let's start with you!
Hazelnut, please!
Cousin Mark?
Original blend!
Vanessa?
Your holidays are covered with Dunkin' coffee. Buy it by the pound or try our new Dunkin' K-Cup packs. Only at Dunkin' stores. America runs on Dunkin'. Price of participation may vary.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Bank of America, the official bank of the New England Patriots.
Copyright 2011, Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
Web radio at Patriots.com is how you reach the program. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Patriots Playbook for a Thursday, 2 days before a Saturday Christmas Eve encounter here at Gillette Stadium as the Patriots get ready for the Miami Dolphins. Patriots won in week one over the Dolphins, 38-24. And they're ready for the redo without Tony Sperano as head coach, relieved of his duties last week. Todd Bowles, the interim head coach, without Chad Henne at quarterback. Matt Moore has taken over and surprisingly done pretty well. Reggie Bush rushed for a career high this last week, in their win over Buffalo, and now is invariably going to top the 1,000-yard mark for his, for the first time, I should add, in his professional career. And I don't know if you knew that or not, but I think he needs, what, like 23 yards against the Patriots on Saturday, and he'll hit 1,000 for the first time in his pro career. Coming from a former Heisman Trophy winner, that's a little surprising. But then again, he wasn't really looked at as an every-down back when he was in New Orleans. Anything but. Maybe that was part of the problem. He was always looked as a change-of-pace guy, you know? Didn't think he could be an every-down 20-plus carry-a-game guy at tailback. He also had, you know, Deuce McAllister at that time when he came into the league, when Bush came into the league. And, you know, with all due respect, McAllister was built a little bit more sturdy. How's that working out now? Bush says, and said after the game this past weekend against Buffalo, that Miami was the one team that gave him an opportunity at the time to be an every down back. And now that he's gotten the carries, he's gotten the touches, he's gotten used to it. And the offensive line, as we talked a little about yesterday, the offensive line has learned how to block for him. Reggie's the kind of guy where you have to hold those blocks a little bit longer because of his elusiveness in the backfield. And because of that, it's been different for an offensive line that's been maligned a little bit, had some injury problems, had some personnel issues this year, and may not have been the best to begin with. But they apparently have learned how to do it. Reggie's learned how to run behind them, and he's looks like he's going to get his 1,000 yards. That's a weapon that you have to pay attention to. Now, it'll be interesting to see what the new coaching staff will do with a guy like Bush and whether or not he will still have his opportunity to be an every down back. I mean, nobody thought Ben Jarvis Green Ellis would be a 1,000-yard rusher ever. He managed to do it last year. He hasn't had quite the same number of touches or opportunities this year as the Patriots have tried to bring in a couple of younger players, you know, in the offensive backfield. And obviously with, you know, the kind of year that Tom Brady has had, there's definitely a penchant to spread it around a little bit more. But point is, we didn't think Ben Jarvis had the, you know, the wherewithal or the capability to do that, and he certainly did it. Here's a guy, Reggie Bush, who comes in to the NFL with certainly a heck of a lot more swag going for him than Ben Jarvis did coming out of college. And you could certainly make the case for, you know, a guy like Reggie Bush being a huge professional disappointment to this point in time. Fact that New Orleans is willing to give up on him, I mean, come on. This guy's a Heisman Trophy winner. Whether he cheated for it or not, he still won it. I don't think he ever gave it back. Did he give it back? I don't think so. I don't think he gave his back. I think Southern Cal gave it back, but his personal one, I don't think he gave back. Neither here nor there. All right, we're still trying to get a hold of Andy Kant, so hopefully we'll catch up with him here in just a little bit. Don't forget, in the second hour, Russell Baxter, ProFootballGuru.com, he will join us as we'll look around the NFL in Week 16. We're going to get him. We're going to get Russell to give us his football grievances as well, because I know he's got to have a couple that probably stick in his craw. I got another one for you. Here's another one for you. I saw where this was, it was a good article written on ESPN Boston about how Tom Brady is having one of the greatest seasons, not only in Patriots history, but really in league history. But it's going to go unnoticed. I mean, we've talked about it. We've talked about the superlatives. We've mentioned the yardage from time to time. We've given Brady his plaudits and his kudos. And, you know, and yeah, we've mentioned it here on the show, but it's kind of like, it's Tom Brady. And maybe I'm exaggerating just slightly. But fact is that the season that Tom Brady is having is historically going to be one of the all-time great seasons for a quarterback in NFL history, if you look at it strictly from a numbers perspective. Now, we all know how explosive 2007 was for this team. Most of us know this. Record-setting year. Patriots went 16-0 in the regular season, yada, yada. You know, blow it in the Super Bowl, but there's no denying that when you think of high-flying, powerful offense, Patriots fans will first say 2007.
Brady threw for 50 touchdowns that year. Record that, you know, that's a record that might not get broken. It probably will at some point. But I tend to think the defenses will catch up with spread offenses and we'll go back to more of a ground-oriented game in a few years. Somebody's going to make that good again. Denver sort of started that this year with the whole, you know, showing some option looks in the NFL. I don't know that that has a lot of shelf life, but, you know, hey, if you can win some games with it, you can get some yardage with it, you can fool some of the people some of the time. You can't fool some of the people all of the time, and then it's that way in football. Nevertheless, 2007 was the year, I think, in a lot of Patriots fans' eyes, and yet Brady's only 213 yards away from breaking his Patriots record set in 2007. 213 yards, that's it. He should, with a decent week, he should get that this weekend and still have the Buffalo game to go. Brady's also very likely to hit a magical milestone in the NFL, and that's 5,000 passing yards in a single season. That's only been done twice in NFL history. Dan Marino, back in 84, 5,084 yards. That's the current record. Drew Brees, 3 years ago in 08, he got really close, within 15 yards, threw for 5,069. Now, not only is Brady on track to beat Marino's record with yards to spare, but as I'm sure many of you are aware, if you follow the NFL relatively closely, you know that Brees is also on track to smash that record this year as well. So this is why, you know, this is one of the reasons why Brady, who is having one of the seasons for the ages, that's why this season is going largely unnoticed by us and by everybody else. Why? Because you got Drew Brees, who's getting ready to pass even Brady's year. Right now, on the current rate, Brady would finish with more than 5,200 yards, which would certainly blast Marino's record. But Brees is on pace for a little over 5,300 yards. Brady's thrown for 35 touchdown passes already this year. And that makes Tom Brady and Brett Favre the only two quarterbacks in NFL history with three 35 touchdown seasons. In fact, as we all know, Brady's on a pace for 40. And that's something that's only been done five times prior to 2011 in the history of the NFL. 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns in a single year has to be one of the top performances ever in NFL quarterbacking history. Has to be. Statistically speaking, has to be. Because nobody else has come close to that. Very few have really come close to that. But this season, you got two quarterbacks who look like they could do it. Amazing, isn't it? Just another, you know, notch in the gun of, you know, taking some things for granted in New England. Brady's having the kind of year he's having. Oh, and let's put this on top of all of that, right? You got Brady and Brees getting ready to shatter Dan Marino's single-season record. And yet Brady and Brees, both, most likely will not win the MVP award. And, of course, it sounds ludicrous even to say this, but this is just the reality in the NFL. I mean, it's weird. But fact is that Aaron Rodgers from Green Bay is probably going to be the MVP, largely because he's led his team to a 13-1 start. His NFL passer rating right now of 120.1 is just off of the single-season record for passer rating that Peyton Manning set back in 2004. I think that was 121. And, of course, while Brady's on pace for 40 touchdowns, Rodgers already has 40. He's on track for 45. And I was going to say, I hedged slightly in saying that, you know, Brady's 50-touchdown season could stand the test of time, but, you know, Aaron Rodgers is the one guy that's there that could possibly top that. So in every area in which Tom Brady has excelled, you've had Brees and you've had Rodgers right there or a little bit better this year. That's a remarkable season by quarterbacking standards in the National Football League. Remarkable. And it's largely going unknown, or not known, maybe not unknown, but it's largely going underappreciated. Not only by others outside of New England, but by Patriots and Patriot fans as well. So there's another grievance for you right there, as long as we're doing the grievance thing today. All right, Andy Kent covers the Dolphins for Dolphins.com, joined us here in the playbook. Andy, thanks for the time today. Happy holidays to you and your family.
Thank you. Happy holidays back at you, guys.
Let me start you off with a question that I've kind of opened it up to our fans here today. In the best interest of Festivus, do you have a football grievance that you'd like to get off your chest? Something that, you know, not only it could certainly do with the Dolphins and the Patriots, it could do with anything in the NFL, but is there something about pro football, something about football in general, that is just wrong that you think could be, needs to be addressed?
Yeah, instant replay
needs to be, that's a good one.
Needs to be fixed again. It just takes too gosh darn long. And, you know, when we're writers are up against the deadline and we're watching this guy keeping his head in the booth till, like, you know, kingdom come, it's like, come on. Make the call or get out of the booth.
Yeah, yeah, there's no doubt about that. Does take way too long. How do we fix the problem? I mean, is there a way to do it?
There's just got to be, you know, maybe just, you know, stricter guidelines of just kind of like a clock, like a running clock, almost like in some of those game shows, you know, like Jeopardy or something like that. You get in there, and, I mean, if just have to set a time limit that, make the call, make the determination within whatever, a minute or 30 seconds or whatever. If it's not, I mean, it can't be that hard to decide. Like, if you can't clear it up in a minute, then it's inconclusive. And then you just got to stick with the call on the field.
Yeah, I think that's probably the fairest way to go. But just to, in the interest of playing devil's advocate here for a moment, you know, the NFL has said, well, we've gone to instant replay because we want to make sure the call is right. And sometimes you just don't know. It's so close that you don't know if you're making the right call. And this is where I'll agree with you. Well, if you don't know, then that means there's a shred of doubt there, and that's when you really should rely on your human instinct, right?
Exactly. I mean, we experienced it last week up in Buffalo, a fumble by Matt Moore that, you know, they were hitting that little rewind button about 20 times, and, you know, you're looking at it, and one person's going, oh, yeah, that's an empty hand, that's a fumble. And then the guy sitting right next to me is going, it can't be a fumble because you could see the ball came out in a spiral, so he had to have thrown it. And, you know, you're waiting, and you're waiting, and you're waiting, and then we all agreed that, okay, there's not enough there to overturn it. And then to hear the guy come out and not say that's the reason we're standing with the call of the field, but to actually say empty hand, you know, we were like, well, you looked at it for 3 minutes. How are you sure it's an empty hand?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's
just
true.
To say it, I can't tell. So we called it a fumble, and it's a fumble.
Right. It would be nice for them to come to that conclusion a little bit earlier. I think officials, what we've done with the instant replay is we've made them gun shy to really rely on their instinct. I think that they will err on the side of caution and go to the booth on something that they're not completely sure of.
Exactly. The game's so fast, you know, I mean, and it's so easy for fans and the media to just get on the refs for the calls. But, I mean, until you're actually out there with these 250, 350-pound men flying around and high speeds around you, and you got to make a call in the split second, it's hard to relate to it. And so, yeah, you want to get it right, but the game is just so fast that it just doesn't lend itself to it, I don't think, as well as, you know, some of the slower games.
All right. Well, in true Seinfeld form, excellent job by you in the airing of a grievance. So
thank you.
Way to get it out there. Now, let's talk more specifically about the team that you cover day in and day out. And obviously they made a coaching change last week. Was it the right move to make?
To be honest with you, at this time, no. I mean, a few of us were kind of trying to scratch our heads and think about the last time the last coach who was 4-2 on a 4-2 streak that got fired, you know, in the middle of the season. I mean, all season long, obviously, you figure at 0-4 going into the bye week, that might have been the right time. And that's when the owner, Steve Ross, came out and vehemently backed Serrano and said, I'm sticking with him to the bitter end, you know, and he cited Patriots and Steelers and Dolphins of old is you gotta, you know, you can't just keep changing things up. Mm-hmm. So we bought that. 0-7, it still would have been fair. But then they go on a tear and they weren't just 4-2. They had won their games by big margins, and it's like, okay, now you're going to fire them for one loss. So I didn't agree with the timing of it. I figured you just let them finish out the season. I don't know what you're going to gain, you know, in these 3 weeks.
Yeah, I have to admit, it's a little curious, especially since now this team has won 5 of 7 since that 0-7 start, and I'm thinking, well, maybe, you know, he's earned the opportunity at least to play out the year, but what do you feel like caused the sudden shift in philosophy here?
You know, I mean, there's a few theories floating around. I mean, we were all sitting in his day after press conference Monday, just, you know, and thinking I had another normal Monday, you know, let's write up the follow-up to the game story. And then, you know, I look at our phones and we see on Twitter that Todd Haley gets fired out in Kansas City. So then 3 hours later, when we get the phone call, y'all need to get back down to the facility. We got a major announcement. Then it was like, okay, they saw that Haley got fired. Jack Del Rio's already been fired. They had to think they knew they were going to fire him, and they must have panicked and said, but if we don't do it now, we might lose out on some of the candidates. That's one thing I think that made sense. The other is I think he might have been worried that had he kept winning and either won out to finish 8-8 or even 7-9, it would have made it a lot more difficult for him to fire him at the end of the season mm-hmm. on that kind of run and knowing that he wanted to do it. But both of those, I think, are answerable by, you know, you let him finish out the season, and if he does win out and you still want to go a different direction, you can do it. You'll take a couple of hits from people going, he went 7-1 down the stretch, but you could say, okay, but he also started out the season 0-7. And we can't ignore that, and we need to fix this.
Right. I guess both reasons are probably good enough as any, but you're right. I will agree with you. I thought the timing was pretty strange, to put it mildly, considering, you know, the issues that the team has had to work through.
And especially the fact that, I mean, at least in his answers to us that afternoon, we were led to believe that he came to the decision late that evening after the Eagles lost, or when he woke up Monday morning. And my thinking was like, okay, well, if that's true, then why did you let him hold his day after press conference with us and talk as if he's coming back to work Wednesday to get ready for the Bills if you knew he wasn't going to? That was a real big head scratch for us.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, well, you know, the product on the field, regardless of who's coaching it, has certainly been better. Why has it been better in your estimation? Is it just a matter of time that it's taken these guys a chance to work it through? Has it been the wrong guys playing early, the right guys playing now? Why has this team gotten better?
I'd go with your first thought, because it's pretty much the same guys. Other than, I mean, obviously Chad Henne, who looked good in that opening game against New England, he gets hurt. Matt Moore, it took him a little while and a couple starts, and then things started clicking. But I think it was more time, just with a new offensive coordinator, with a coordinator trying to figure out exactly how to use Reggie Bush. I mean, all that suddenly was coming together really, you know, around the Denver game. I mean, and that was right around the time that the coach also made a change, Coach Brano, in the practice schedule and the whole workout regimen, and they responded. They were 15-0 with 3 minutes left in that game, and we all know what happened. The Tim Tebow story began.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It never ended.
Yeah, no
kidding. And then, you know, the next week they're up 14-3 on the Giants, 17-10 in the fourth quarter. They could have easily been on a bigger streak, and then they just tore apart the Chiefs and the Bills and the Redskins and should have beaten the Cowboys. So I think it was just time, and everything started clicking, just unfortunately after, you know, 7 games had already gone through into the loss column.
Yeah, it just didn't happen soon enough, really, to help out Tony Sperano, did it?
No, that's sad. And that's kind of the sad part, because clearly, I mean, the players were playing really hard for him. I mean, you know, I'd be hard-pressed to find too many coaches that at 0-7 could have done what he did and kept that team inspired, kept that team motivated, and gotten them to play like they did, knowing that at 0-7 the season was lost, and suddenly they were on a tear, and that's not easy to do.
Right. Andy Kent, Dolphins.com, joining us here in Patriots Playbook. All right, so this team, you know, is certainly, you know, I talked about earlier before you joined us that, you know, it doesn't appear that they have a lot to play for, but at the same time, motivation is what you make out of it. And guys, especially at this level, get self-motivated quite a bit. A lot of these guys, hey, this entire coaching staff, they're playing for their jobs right now.
Exactly. They're playing for their jobs. A lot of the guys, and you'll still hear them saying after the press conference, are playing for Sperano. I mean, some of the ones that were really close to him are kind of like wanting to send a message to the owner that you did this guy wrong, especially a guy like Reggie Bush, who you know, Sperano and Daboll gave him the chance to do what he's been asking to do since he came in the league and prove that he could be an every down back, and he's proven it. So, you know, they're playing for their jobs. Some of the other guys were at the end of their contract, either trying to prove that they deserve a new contract with this team or show other teams out there that they're worthy. So they've got plenty to play for. Statistical milestones, Reggie's 27 yards away from 1,000, which would be a first for him, and then also would be a first in Dolphins history that we would have a running back, a 1,000-yard rusher and a 1,000-yard receiver in the same season.
Wow. All the great teams the Dolphins have had, and they've never had a 1,000 receiver and rusher in the same year?
Can you believe that? I was shocked when I heard that note, and I wrote that story yesterday. I mean, you take a Warfield and Zonka, and I mean, those years they had 3,000-yard rushers, the Marino years. But then it starts making sense when you remember that when Marino was going off like crazy, they didn't really have a running game. I mean, they went like 15 years in between 1,000-yard rushers from like 79 to, you know, the mid-90s. So Warfield and Zonka came the closest in 71. Warfield had 996 receiving yards, and Zonka went over 1,000.
Wow, that's an amazing number. And, of course, you brought up the Marino, and I've been talking about, in fact, just before you joined us, I was going on about how, you know, statistically speaking, Brady's having one of the great years in NFL history. It's going to get buried because you've got not only Drew Brees but also Aaron Rodgers, who are equally having his good years. And both Brady and Brees look like they're going to smash Marino's record.
Exactly, and Rodgers has a legitimate chance to join them as well. They can all go over the 500. And Brees almost caught Marino a couple of years ago. I think
yep.
2 or 3 years ago, he was like 15 yards.
15
short,
yards, so. Yeah, right.
That's amazing. And like you said, I was noticing that as I'm writing my stories leading up to this game and talking about the secondary and how they're going to have to try to stop Brady after what he did to him on that Monday night, and I'm looking at his season. He's already got a career high in passing yards. He's at 35 touchdowns, I believe. I mean, and it's like, oh, you know, like you said, people just look at it every week and it's Brady being Brady, but you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's not Brady just being Brady. It's Brady smashing some more records.
No kidding. All right, before I get back to Reggie Bush, who I want to touch on, you brought up obviously the season opener, which, you know, for the Patriots, I think it opened up some eyes around here. I know it opened up some eyes in Miami, maybe around the whole NFL, as Brady threw for better than 500 yards on that opening Monday night. How does that game have any effect on the game that will be played here on Saturday?
You know, I don't, because it was so long ago. I mean, it was literally opening night, now we're in week 16. It's definitely for Miami, they remember it and how embarrassing it was. Mike Nolan yesterday, in fact, said that was the worst loss he's ever experienced ever as a coach. Not like one of the worst. And Todd Bowles was talking about, it didn't matter what we did, didn't matter what coverage we played with, that guy was hitting every throw. So they're looking at it more as like it was just one of those games where we played ridiculously bad. This is them quoting it, and Brady was just on fire. I think now they're looking at it as this defense is a completely different defense as far as the way they're playing. Benny Sapp, who was the guy unfortunately burned on that 99-yard Walker touchdown, he's no longer here. Will Allen is playing at a higher level. And then Vontae Davis had 2 interceptions in last week's game. He's got 4 interceptions just in the last 6 games. They're just playing with a lot more confidence, and they feel that they, you know, we know what Brady does, and I mean, it's hard to stop it, but they feel a lot more confident that it's going to be a little bit different, they hope, this time around than that Monday night.
Okay. Defensively, then, how has this team grown? I won't say gotten better. Certainly, they've been more competitive in a lot of games, but how has it grown? How has it changed for the better?
I think just communication. I mean, again, the biggest free agent acquisition in the offseason for them was Kevin Burnett.
Right.
He came in with some gaudy stats from out of San Diego. And that first 4 or 5 games, him and Carlos Dansby just weren't on the same page. And he seemed to look a little lost in Mike Nolan's defense. And then suddenly it clicked for them at the week of the Giants game. And everything starts with them. They're the ones calling the defense. They get everybody lined up. And now that they're in sync and the front three, and the emergence of Jared Odrick are constantly, they're getting a lot more pressure now. It's just all kind of domino effect to the back end. And they're just playing with such confidence. And Nolan now has more confidence to blitz and just mix things up more than he did back then, because he feels that Vontae Davis and John Smith, they can handle one-on-one coverage. Will Allen can handle Wes Welker inside, which is, that's that's a tall task
yeah.
for a short guy. But
sure.
they're just playing at a completely different level and mentally and physically.
I think you probably realize, though, and I'm sure the Dolphins have worried about it this week, that it may not necessarily be the issue of handling Welker as much as it is trying to figure out a way to stop a guy like Rob Gronkowski.
You know, yeah, we've been talking about that all week. Nobody has figured it out this year. And I, you know, honestly, I don't think there is a way. I mean, the guy is a freak. Remember when they used to call Javon Kearse the freak on defense?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think anybody can compare him to anybody. He's so big. He catches the ball so well. He's fast. He runs great routes. And he can block. I mean, there's really, you kind of have to concede the fact that, look, the guy's going to get his. You just got to hope that, you know, on the other end, you can get to Brady before he has a chance to find Gronkowski. Because that's really the only way to stop him is not let the ball get thrown in the air.
No question. Yeah, no question about that. All right, let me flip back over to the offense again just for a moment, because I wanted to bring up Reggie Bush and the fact that, you know, he's, as you suggested, 27 yards away from hitting 1,000 for the first time in his pro career.
Yeah.
Was it Sperano that largely gave him the opportunity? Daboll, who was it that said, all right, Reggie, you're our every down kind of guy? And did he really come to Miami with the knowledge that he was going to get a chance to be a 20, 25 carry a game guy?
Yes, and I think that was actually, I mean, during their talks as the trade was going down, that was on his end something that he wanted some assurance of. And on the Dolphins' end, I believe it was Sperano who gave him the assurance, who's played against him enough, saw enough on film. I mean, he's good friends with Sean Payton, so obviously the Saints chose not to use him that same way, but I think that Sperano must have felt more comfortable in knowing that it wasn't so much because they didn't think Reggie could do it, as because they had Deuce McAllister there. You know, they've had some of the other big running backs there, and with Ricky Williams, Ronnie Brown gone, and a rookie in Daniel Thomas here, that wasn't the issue. And I think Sperano said, you know what, this guy can do it, and we're going to let him prove it to us. And from the beginning of training camp, Bush was the first one on the practice field, the last one off. He was doing all sorts of unique drills on his own to strengthen his upper body. And like I said, early on in the season, they were still trying to get in sync with Brian Daboll's offense and how this was going to work with the passing game. But once they decided, let's just see what this guy can do, it was off to the races. And he's doing it in between the tackles. He's doing it on the outside. He's finishing runs. He's running people over. And he just seems to be having fun out there and seems to be like, look, I told everybody all along I can do this. I'm just going to keep showing it to him.
Let me give you just a couple more quick ones, Andy.
Sure.
Number one, Matt Moore. Does he have a long-term prognosis in Miami, and what would it be?
Long-term, it would be kind of up in the air on just who comes in as the new head coach, who they draft. He's definitely given them a lot of confidence down the stretch that he's more than just a backup or a game manager. I mean, he unlocked the key to Brandon Marshall here in the last part of the season in terms of getting the ball downfield. So I think he's a guy that they would look at as, you know what, he's shown enough in the last 10 games that he can start for us next year. If we do draft a quarterback, a top-notch quarterback out of those three or four that are in there, they can sit, they can groom him properly and not have to throw him to the wolves. And then he would just be that guy that can start when you need him to, and you could wait till your rookie's ready, or if he gets hurt, you can go back to him.
Okay. And then number two, who do you think ultimately is going to be the head coach of this team? Nothing like pinning you with a good one for the end, right?
Exactly. And it's the toughest question because it's so hard to figure out what Steve Ross's thinking process is. I mean, we were so – a lot of us were surprised that when he decided, okay, we need to make a change, that he didn't make a wholesale change, that he still kept Jeff Ireland as general manager, because that obviously, if that sticks – it eliminates three or four people off of his wish list. Guys like Cowher and Gruden and Fisher, they want their own guy. So if it's going to stay in that mold, Brian Billick would make a lot of sense. He's come out and said he's interested. Mike Nolan was his defensive coordinator in Baltimore, so he'd be comfortable with him. He doesn't seem to be a guy that was going to demand control and want his own GM. So if the decision had to be made today, he'd be the leading candidate in the clubhouse, I think.
Brian Billick. Interesting. I think it would certainly add a little extra spice to the AFC East if you threw him in there with a guy like Belichick and a guy like Rex Ryan, huh?
Exactly. If you remember, yeah, Billick was not short on ego as
not at all.
Did not hesitate to remind us in press conferences that he knew more than we did.
Of course. Make it fun anyway. Well, happy holidays to you and yours, Andy, and I hope that you'll manage to, you know, we'll love to have you up here. Stay as long as you like, but I hope you can have a quick turnaround so you can get back for Christmas over the weekend.
Yes, I appreciate it. My boy's kind of hoping for the same thing.
I'm sure. I'm sure that is the case. Thanks so much for the time. Safe travels.
Anytime. Thanks, guys. Happy holidays.
You got it. Andy Kent, Dolphins.com, with the latest from South Florida and Miami. All right, you want to snap another quick break in here, and then we'll grab Mr. Baxter? All right, Russell Baxter, pro football guru extraordinaire, coming up next in the playbook.
Dear business traveler high in the sky, it's for important work that you do fly. But on JetBlue, we've made your job more fun with free DirecTV to play when your tasks are done. And with 40-plus nonstop straight from Boston, you won't have layovers to cities like Austin. Log on at JetBlue.com or call for an experience dedicated to you above all. My name is Luana, and I'm a JetBlue crew member.
And that was a dedication to you from JetBlue. Experience it firsthand by flying JetBlue for business. Book now at JetBlue.com/business. DirecTV service available on flights in 48 contiguous states only.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you, from Boston sports to concert and theater. Whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS.
1-800-MY-SEATS. Be an MVP this holiday season and give the Patriot fan on your list a gift from the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop and PatriotsProShop.com have the widest selection of authentic Patriots merchandise on the planet. Everything from jerseys and sweatshirts to hats, t-shirts, autographed memorabilia, and more. The Patriots Pro Shop at Gillette Stadium is open Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Droid. Introducing the Droid Bionic by Motorola. So powerful it can access your home computer remotely and pull out your music, movies, images, and documents at the mind-melting speed of Verizon 4G LTE. The Droid Bionic. It's not only the master of droids, it's the master of machines. Control it, and you control everything.
Get the new Droid Bionic by Motorola and never sync with a cord again. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com/4GLTE.
Hey, Tom, what's on your holiday wish list?
Joy and happiness to all.
Oh, because I was thinking of giving you packaged coffee from Dunkin' Donuts.
Ooh, that's better.
Nothing beats Dunkin's packaged coffee. Right now, buy 3 pounds and get a fourth free. Only at Dunkin' Donuts restaurants. So give America's favorite coffee as a gift or stock up yourself. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Happy holidays, everyone. Glad you could make it to the house. Who's up for some Dunkin' coffee?
Yeah.
Grandma, let's start with you.
Hazelnut, please.
Cousin Mark.
Original blend.
Vanessa.
Your holidays are covered with Dunkin' coffee. Buy it by the pound or try our new Dunkin' K-Cup packs. Only at Dunkin' stores. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Bank of America, the official bank of the New England Patriots.
Copyright 2011, Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Now is your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
On Facebook and Twitter, too, and email webradio@patriots.com. Steve on Facebook says, John, my football Festivus flack for 2011 is what happened with all the time we were supposed to be spending between touchdown and PATs while the refs review the play. Yes, there have been a few, but I thought this was supposed to take the excitement away from a Gronk touchdown spike. Also, where are all the touchbacks? Wasn't every kick supposed to come out of the 20, taking the excitement away from the kickoff? Tisk, tisk. You mean you don't want touchback? I mean, you don't want kickoff returns, Steve? Do I have that right? You don't like kickoff returns? To me, that was one of the most exciting parts of the game that the NFL kind of took away. Understand that they're trying to take that away because of the injury factor on special teams there, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just not thinking that correctly. Maybe you'll have to correct me on that one. Our own pro football guru, the one Russell S. Baxter, joined us here inside the playbook. Russell, today I kind of started out by using an old Seinfeld theme, you know, during Festivus. I know you recall the show fondly.
Sure.
The old Seinfeld theme of Festivus for the rest of us and the airing of grievances. Do you recall?
Yes.
You recall that? Okay. You recall that? Well, I was going to ask you if you had a football-related grievance. I was going to give you the opportunity to air that football-related grievance right now. What about pro or college football? What about football in general? Do you feel like it needs to be discussed here?
Well, I mean, if I ever did have a grievance, and I'm actually just very thankful we had football this year.
This is true,
especially in the NFL. But you know, it's probably a cop out one, but. Can you please give me a playoff system in college football? I mean, I know there's all kind of ramification, but, you know, guys spend 3 hours blocking and tackling and throwing and hitting, and then it's decided by a computer. So, you know, and voting and all that stuff. I've never understood it. I've never understood how you can have co-champions. If you can have two champions, why don't we have three champions? You know, just... It's not the biggest deal in the world. You know, I about a month ago, I was down actually at the Division II playoffs, New Haven, Connecticut, and Kutztown.
Mm-hmm.
Kutztown, the home of Andre Reed and Bruce Harper.
Mm-hmm.
And game I saw down there. And the other divisions have playoffs. That would be my only gripe. Although I'll throw out one more for college football.
Okay.
Can we please get 2 feet and bounds on the catch and let the guys get up after they catch the ball when they fall down if they haven't been touched?
Yeah, I like that one. I like the fact that if you haven't been touched when you fall down, you should be able to get up.
And I like getting 2 feet in instead of 1 foot in for a receiver. I mean, I think to me it's always been one of the fascinations with watching some of the great wide receivers of all time, and Chris Carter comes to mind because no one was better than trying to get those 2 feet in bounds. I think that's just an art form in terms of being on the football field, and if you only have to get 1 foot in bounds, and I say that only because – my college football career was cut short because I never played. I just there's something magnificent about watching athletes do that. And obviously getting 2 feet in is harder than getting one. So little tweaks to the game and so on, but give me a playoff and I'll be fine and I won't bother anybody anymore.
Here's a prediction for you. I think when the new round of BCS negotiations come up after the next year, I'm going to predict that we won't have a true tournament style playoff, but what we will have is a plus one, which means, of course, then that after all the bowl games are done, they'll take the top two teams and you'll play a national championship game.
I can live with that. I mean, that's at least a start. You know, it's at least a start. But, you know, the BCS system, you know, it is what it is and so on. But I would just like to see it set. And some people say, well, it is being settled on the field. But, nah, it's not really. It's not really. I mean, listen, what makes the NFL playoffs so exciting? I mean, these days it's that anybody can win it. When we see it, you know, the last 6 years, three wild card teams have come and won the Super Bowl. So, which means anybody's got a shot. And I think that's what you would probably like to see in all sports.
Right.
No one likes to – you want to root for the underdog or you want to root for the 11th-ranked team?
Right.
Okay. That, you know, probably oversimplifying the point, but I would just like to see college football settled like pro football settled.
Right. I kind of agree with that. That's a good one to have. It's a very good one to have. All right. We'll move on to the week's schedule. You know, first and foremost, the game tonight – has the Texans playing at the Colts. Colts are off the schneid. They've got their win.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of talked a little bit about this earlier this week, but if Patriots fans, you know, are at all somewhat skittish over their chances of sweeping these last two, then they should be rooting real hard for the Colts tonight, strange as that sounds, simply because with a Colts win, what that does is that it would still enable the Patriots to potentially qualify for a bye in the first round of the playoffs, even if they stumble this week or next.
Well, listen, I found, you know, it's a very interesting week in the NFL last week, and that goes without saying because just about every week is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the team that couldn't lose lost, and the team that couldn't win won.
Yeah.
And it happened all in one week, and it happened simultaneously.
And that hasn't happened often in NFL history, has it?
Well, I mean, you just don't see it. You know what's funny about the Colts? The last time the Colts were 0-13, I believe they fired their coach, and Ron Meyer took over, which was 1986. They proceeded to win their last three games.
Interesting.
So now, here we are, and they close with their three divisional foes, all of whom beat them this year. And little known fact, and obviously having Peyton and Manning on the field helps, but still, how's this for consistency, John? The last time the Colts were swept in a division was 2002, and it was the Tennessee Titans.
Okay.
But even the year that the Colts didn't win the division, which was 2008, and they were a wild card, okay?
Yeah.
They still were not swept by the Jaguars or the Texans or the Titans. That's pretty impressive and quite the stretch. You know, and I know New England has similar. And so I'm trying to think just off the top, when was the last time that the Patriots were swept by a division foe? Okay? Because right off the top of my head, I really can't. Maybe 2000? I think it might have been 2000. I don't think they were swept in 2001.
No, I think it would have to. Yeah,
I think the Patriots been swept since 2000.
I think you're right. I think 2000 was it off the top of my head. Yeah,
right. And because they were 5-11 and so on. But anyway,
right.
So the Titans had that chance to sweep and couldn't get it done. Now here comes Houston, who has never won in Indianapolis, 0-9, coming off a loss and a loss that probably had some people scratching their heads because it was at home to Carolina. Although we're learning that Carolina can score points on just about anyone. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, we talked about the I don't want to say the round robin, but it was kind of like the four corners.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore, Pittsburgh, New England, Houston, all being 10-3 last week. Well, now three of them are 10-4, and one of them is 11-3.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens to be the Patriots. So, if Houston is walking in, and remember how Houston, these teams played the first game of the season, and it was 34-0 before you knew it. It was obviously the Colts' first game without Peyton Manning in 14 years, and Kerry Collins fumbled his way through the first half, and Houston coasted. And Houston coasted, I believe, without Arian Foster. I don't think Arian Foster played in that game. It was Ben Tate that really, you know, handled the bulk of the rushing yards, and Ben Tate needs about 150 and change in the last two games to give the Texans 2,000 rushers this season.
Right.
So they're obviously accomplishing a lot. But Houston still wants to be playing good football. They're going to the playoffs for the first time. And they should, I think, they should take care of business tonight. But as we are seeing in this league, and, I'm not surprised, but there's such an air of professionalism. This idea that teams are going to roll over or play lousy so they can get a higher pick, which I've never bought into that theory, okay? I mean, I just haven't. I can name you year after year where a four-win or a three-win team has ruined it for a team trying to get to the playoffs. Okay, it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
People want to win.
Right.
Players want to win. Players aren't, let's win one for the GM. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's win one for ourselves. Okay? Let me hit some incentives. Let me go out there with some pride. That's, we all play to win, in our profession.
In theory. Yeah.
Well, theoretically, we do. I'm not going to be surprised if the Colts knock off the Texans tonight.
Wow.
I won't. I think the Texans need to. And then listen, the Texans, the best the Texans have ever finished in the division is 4-2, which was a couple years ago. So they've never gone 5-1, or obviously never 6-0.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're going to find out in these next couple weeks. And listen, think about some of the right off the top of my head. Playoff bound Houston lost last week. Playoff bound Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Green Bay. All these teams heading to the playoffs lost. This is not the time to get into a two- or three-game losing streak heading into the postseason.
No question.
And for a team like Houston that's never been to the playoffs, I don't think you want to go in losing three straight or losing two of your last three.
Right. All right, let's also look then at the AFC West, because that one seems to be certainly wide open.
Wait a minute, how long am I on?
You're on for a while here, but I mean, we'll try to...
Maybe we have time to do the AFC West.
We'll try to sort of narrow it down as best we can, since it's not exactly our division, but it certainly has a lot of intrigue to it, and the Patriots were involved in it last week before they got by the Denver Broncos. The Broncos are playing at the Bills this weekend, and then you've got the Raiders facing the Chiefs, and then not to be left out of the mix... you have the Chargers have to go on the road and take on the Detroit Lions. Everybody seems to have a significant battle on their hands this weekend, maybe with the exception of Denver. Does that give Denver the definitive advantage?
Well, the only reason Denver has a somewhat advantage is because they can get in the playoffs this week. I mean, if they win and the Raiders lose, they win the West. If they also get a bunch of teams to lose, like the Jets, et cetera, and a couple other teams, they could actually get in the playoffs this weekend as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they are at least in that position. But isn't it funny that all top three, and it's funny to say top three in the AFC West because one team's 8-6 and the other two are 7-7, are all on the road this week, and the only home team is Kansas City.
Right.
And Kansas City, by the way, can still win the division at 8-8.
Yes.
That is not... Listen, 3 years ago, the Chargers won that division at 8-8.
Right.
So, never let it be said. Remember, Kansas City smoked the Raiders in Carson Palmer's, not his first start, but his first game.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Kyle Bowler threw three interceptions, one return for a touchdown?
Right.
Yep. And then the Raiders showed their balance on offense that day by putting Carson Palmer in the game, and he threw three interceptions and had one return for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
So, six picks, 28-0. Very interesting to see what the Chiefs have done on occasion. Played the Steelers tough at Arrowhead on a Sunday night. Obviously knocked off the Packers last week with, almost had, over 400 yards of offense. Kyle Orton was a yard away from a 300-yard passing game. Did a great job protecting Kyle Orton. He was not sacked. Chiefs didn't commit a turnover. And then this is off of a game where they played the Jets and they gained 4 yards in the total, 4 total yards in the first half. So you tell me you can figure out this league when you see that happen. And then 6 weeks ago, the last team to beat the hot New Orleans Saints are the St. Louis Rams.
Right.
So that's the league. Okay. I mean, we sit there and look at schedules and try to figure it out, but could also look at Denver as well, John. I mean, I know I'm all over the map here a little, but that's how this AFC West is.
Yeah.
San Diego getting hot at the right time. Buffalo's lost 7 in a row, but are they capable of doing what New England did last week and forcing some turnovers? That was the modus operandi. Did I got that word right? I hope.
I believe you did.
Yeah. But that's what the Bills did early in the season when they were winning, was forcing turnovers. You saw what happened last week when Denver kind of imploded in that second quarter and gave the Patriots, like, really three short fields to score 13 quick points.
Right.
And really changed that game.
It did.
So is that possible? I think it's certainly possible. Buffalo can at least score points, and Denver at times can struggle to score points. So I wouldn't be surprised if Buffalo knocks off Denver. I somehow get it into my mind that we're still going to be waiting a week in the AFC West in terms of crowning a champion or finding out who's going to the playoffs. And, of course, of all the games there, the most entertaining, without a doubt, has to be the, you know, the December Chargers, and here they are again, hanging around, against a Lions team that can accomplish two things this weekend. If they win, they'll be in the playoffs for the first time since 1999. If they win, they will also win 10 games for the first time, you ready? 1995.
Wow.
Okay, they haven't won 10 games in 16 years.
Wow.
So obviously we know it's been lean times. They're already guaranteed their first winning season since 2000 when they finished 9-7. Remember, in 99 when they made the playoffs, they were an 8-8 playoff team. So a lot to be accomplished there. We saw, you know, them with the late heroics at Oakland last week. A fascinating week in the AFC West, as well as some of the other divisions as well. But I think between that and what's going to happen in the NFC East, I think those are the areas I'm at least looking at. So some of the other teams are jockeying for position. We know the AFC North, we're still trying to figure out who's going to be the wild card and who's going to be the division champion. But at least we know both the Steelers and the Ravens are going to the playoffs, and we already know that New England's won the AFC East.
Right. All right. We'll get to those in a moment. But you brought up the NFC East, so let's kind of segue that way. Eagles, Cowboys. Cowboys have the opportunity, but the Eagles seem to be the team that are charging hard. Question is, have they waited until too late?
Well, here's another team that, if things break right with them, they can win the NFC East at 8-8.
Right.
And, you know, when you see them play like they did last week, and I think it was a combination of them playing. And listen, they also, I think they had four turnovers last week and still scored 45 points. So, you know, when you see them running the way they're running there with Vic and LeSean McCoy, LeSean McCoy obviously having a monster year. And let's keep something in mind. The last two times he played the Cowboys, okay, which was in Dallas last year and then the Sunday night game this year in Philadelphia, 334 yards rushing, 149 and 185. John, on a total of 46 attempts, do the math, that's almost 7.5 yards a carry. So the two games in which the Cowboys the last 2 years have played against Michael Vick and the Eagles, they've given up 30 points and 34 points, well over 400 yards of offense. Last year in Dallas, it was McCoy and DeSean Jackson eating them alive. This year, it was McCoy and just the overall balance of their team. And get this, in case you think that the Cowboys were totally dominated, this was a game in which DeMarcus Ware sacked Michael Vick four times, and still the Cowboys lost by 27 points.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Oh, I know you're well aware, but yeah. I mean, I just find that, you know, the matchup, I mean, sometimes it's just the matchup. And listen, we saw Dallas' defense against the Giants a couple of weeks ago really have their problems, especially late in the game. Not their offense, but their defense. So, you know, they're going to have to do some things here. I think there's going to be some really wild, high-scoring games. This is obviously going to be one of them. I think San Diego-Detroit is shaping up as a real Donnybrook as well and so on. You know, we had the fantastic start to the season with all those points and all those 300-yard passing games. And then we kind of had like a little lull in the middle here. We seem like we've gained momentum again here down the stretch. You know, with 2 weeks to go, there's been 106 300-yard passing games. It's already the new NFL record.
Right.
And there's still 2 weeks to go.
It doesn't surprise me in the least what we've been talking about in terms of offense this year. One of those things that is kind of like ridden under the radar, but offenses are all prolific nowadays. Jets and Giants, certainly part of that mix of the NFC East and in the AFC East as well. The Giants, I believe, are the home team. I mean, excuse me, the Jets are the home team in this, correct?
I believe you're correct, and the home team hasn't met much in this rivalry. But
no.
I think I want to see the home team is 4-7. Something like that. And my actually one of my favorite facts about this series is it's obviously it's the Battle of New York. And of the 11 previous times that they played, only one time did they ever play in New York, which was at Shea Stadium in 1970.
That's bizarre.
Most of the games have been in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, one game, John, it may be near and dear to your heart, the Yale Bowl in New Haven, Connecticut.
Yeah, that's right.
In 1974.
That's right.
So the Battle of New York often takes place in New Jersey. Very confusing. And when it comes to confusion, it's been very confusing year trying to figure out both the Jets and the Giants. And unfortunately, a lot of it has fallen on their quarterbacks, and both of them have had their problems with turnovers this year.
Mm-hmm.
Eli's turned over the ball 19 times. Mark Sanchez has turned it over 20 times. And if you combine what's happened to both of them, those 39 turnovers have amounted to 8 touchdowns returned, 5 off of Sanchez and 3 off of Manning.
Wow.
So listen, it's the holiday season, but they've kind of been giving since September.
They really have been, haven't they?
Yeah.
Wow. Best guess, who ends up on top in the NFC East?
My best guess is I still think it's going to be the Giants.
Really?
I think the Giants win this week, and I think Philly wins this week. And then I have to play out the rest of it and so on. But I think the Giants will win out. And I think they'll wind up getting the division because they'll beat Dallas at home. And even though I think Philly very conceivably is going to finish 8-8, I think the Giants might wind up stealing this thing at 9-7.
Wow.
And if they do steal it at 9-7, by the way, it'll be first time in the history of that division, the NFC East, that we don't have a 10-win team. There's never been a 9-7 or 8-8 or 9-6-1 NFC East champion, John, and that goes all the way back to 1970 in the merger.
Is that parity or the teams just stink?
Well, I mean, it just shows you how good that division's been over the years that it's never happened. And listen, we just cite it. Remember Arizona? Arizona went to the Super Bowl a couple years ago as a 9-7 division champion.
Right, right.
San Diego is at 8-8. I mean, every once in a while, it happens in the other divisions. I don't know if it's parity so much this year. The one thing I'll say about the Eagles is even though they've had a miserable year at 6-8, they're 3-1 in the division. That's the thing that's most interesting. They've beaten. They whacked Dallas and they lost to the Giants, obviously at home. But then they turn around and beat the Giants at the Meadowlands.
Mm-hmm.
So the Eagles conceivably could finish maybe 5-1 in the division and wind up not making the playoffs. It would almost be like what you saw last year with Oakland, who swept the West 6-0, but they were 2-8 outside the division and wound up not going to the playoffs.
That really doesn't make any sense. You go 5-1 in your division and you don't win the division. I don't know what that says about your team though, because I mean you can beat your division teams, but you can't take care of business elsewhere. I would think you don't deserve to be the division champion.
Well, that's exactly right. Like I said, remember the Raiders last year, perfect 6-0. But you think about the Eagles this year. They blew a 20-point lead at home to San Francisco. They lost at home to the Bears. They lost on a Sunday night at Atlanta. All the other contenders in the NFC, they haven't fared well against. You can even point out, because I think we forget this, that both the Cardinals and the Seahawks, John, are both 7-7 now.
Yeah.
After their miserable start.
Yeah.
And the Eagles lost to both those teams as well.
Sure did.
Remember, the Eagles lost at home to Arizona.
Arizona.
And then on a Thursday night a couple weeks ago, got pushed around by Marshawn Lynch and the Seahawks. So they have not fared well at the least against any other contenders in the division other than being able to hold their own within the division.
Hmm.
And that would be a nightmare, not a dream.
Yeah. The two teams that are obviously vying for an opening round bye in the AFC playoffs, contending with the Patriots allegedly for the top slot of the AFC, would be Steelers and the Ravens in particular. We've already talked a little about the Texans, of course, who played a night against Indianapolis. But Steelers are at home against the Rams. The Ravens are at home against the Browns. Who's more likely to stub their toe?
I know this might even make you laugh. I think it might be the Steelers.
No kidding.
Yeah, I think it might be the Steelers. Listen, and I know it doesn't look like Sam Bradford and probably not A.J. Feely, so it could be Kellen Clemens again. And, you know, depending on what you read and what you hear, it may or may not be Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh. And frankly, I think it'd be a mistake. And, you know, I have no medical training, but, you know, when you can't push off on that foot and you're, and the ball keeps on sailing on you a lot of times like it did Monday night.
Yeah, I was about to say, we saw that Monday. So
right, and you can't protect yourself. Let's not forget, they're also down Marquise Pouncey, their Pro Bowl center. You know, it doesn't make helping protecting Big Ben any easier. And what's the hallmark of Ben Roethlisberger? Is it dropping back and firing, or is it extending plays? It's extending plays.
Plays, right.
Okay, and if he can't do that, and the one thing the Rams do, you know, fairly well is rush the passer. Now, offensively, the Rams are not very good at all. I mean, they're terrible, but they can rush the passer. So what happens if you get three or four sacks and two or four, you know, force a couple fumbles and score some points and so on? So I think, listen, the Ravens, I think, have beaten the Browns, what, seven times in a row and are always able to run the football on them. And I don't think that'll be any different this time around. So even though the Rams have only won two games, matchup-wise, with the Steelers' offensive line, that could be where the issue is. So I don't think either one's going to happen. I think both teams will probably hold serve at home. But if I had to pick one or the other, I would think the Rams would have a better shot than the Browns would.
Sure. One game actually on Christmas Day has Chicago playing at Green Bay. How did Green Bay get so lucky to play both on Thanksgiving and Christmas?
I don't know. It might have had something to do with winning the Super Bowl. That's going to be my guess.
Yeah, they kind of put those champs. Yeah, we kind of forget about that around here. It's been a few years, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you know, as you know, as far as the NFL goes, Thanksgiving is every year. Christmas, there's like a window where it's like three straight years, and then it doesn't happen for a while.
Right. Right.
You know, I think it's the third year in a row they're playing on Christmas, and then of course. Yeah, and as you know, and John, you're a history buff like I am, in a piece I wrote yesterday for ProFootballGuru.com, you know, I had to reference what will be the 40-year anniversary on Sunday of still the longest game played in the history of the National Football League.
Right.
Which, of course, is Kansas City and Miami in the divisional playoffs at Old Municipal Stadium, the last game played there, with Gary Yapremian and Jan Stenerud, and the Dolphins won in the second overtime. And Ed Podolak and Larry Zonka, et cetera, et cetera.
Ed Podolak.
That's not what you asked me about. But yeah. Shameless plug, what the heck?
No, I think it's great. I'm glad you brought that up. Ed Podolak.
Ed Podolak, for people out there who don't remember who he is, and he wasn't like a big star in the NFL.
He was a solid
rushing,
back.
Receiving, kickoff returns, and punt returns
he
in
did
that it, game.
He did everything.
350 total yards.
Yeah, he was an amazing. I mean, he was great. I thought he was a great player for that era, especially great player.
Right. And I can already see it right now. There, are, all your listeners are right now finding if they can get Ed Podolak on their fantasy football team for the weekend.
Of course,
of course.
Only it would be kind of interesting to see what kind of numbers he could put up.
Yeah,
he could do a lot of different things.
Yeah, right. Obviously, and in the days before, you know, now we have the guys like Darren Sproles and back 10 years ago, Derek Mason, trying to think if Derek doesn't still have the all-purpose record. Eric Metcalf.
I think one
of my favorite guys, he was a one-year wonder for the Patriots, was Matt Caron.
Right, right. You know what? Right.
Everything for the Patriots in 1974.
That's right. I think Sproles is actually a pretty good modern-day, you know, comparison, even though he's
Lionel Little Train James with the Chargers in 1985.
Little Train James.
Yeah.
Now you're pulling some names out, Russell.
Absolutely. But, I mean, these are the guys who have these phenomenal 1 years, and it's rushing, receiving, kickoff returns, punt returns.
Right.
And Ed Podolak in that game was amazing. And he also scored a touchdown rushing. He scored a touchdown receiving. But the Chiefs lost in the midway through the second overtime in that game, and Miami eventually went on to lose to Dallas in the Super Bowl that year before winning the back-to-back titles.
Right.
The Packers, you know, very interesting game for the Packers last week, and that probably goes without saying, obviously, because they lost for the first time since they lost to the Patriots last year without Aaron Rodgers on a Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that was most interesting about that game last week, John, let me count the ways here. First time all year, the Packers didn't have a takeaway.
Mm.
First time all year, the Packers didn't have a sack.
Right.
First time all year the Packers didn't score at least 24 points.
Right.
First time all year Aaron Rodgers didn't throw two touchdown passes.
So have we figured out how to beat the Packers now?
And first time all year they lost the game.
That's right.
Now, that's, you know, that's very it. And but the thing, unfortunately, they did lose was some offensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, in this league, you can have those great quarterbacks, and if they don't have time to throw, you're in a world of trouble. And listen, the Packers still need a win or a San Francisco loss to wrap up home field throughout the playoffs. But they are playing two teams at home the next 2 weeks. If they can do anything with Julius Peppers and company, and the week after with Ndamukong Suh and Cliff Averill and Kyle Vandenbosch, they can rush the quarterback. And it'll be very interesting to see how the Packers attack this. You know, because now we're not worrying about going undefeated. Now it's, for lack of a better word, a little battle of survival for Aaron Rodgers and see what they can do to revamp that their offensive line. You know, Bulaga out, Derek Sherrod, who came in for him, broke his leg. He's gone for the season. Chad Clifton's been gone most of the year at left tackle. So they've had to do a lot of adjusting. Now, I'm not trying to do doom and gloom for the Packers here and so on, but, you know, there's just such an assumption, well, Aaron Rodgers is okay, right? But it doesn't work that way.
Right.
Okay, you've got to have all the pieces. And I know the Packers overcame a lot last year with all those injuries, guys who they lost early in the season and they were able to adjust to. But now you're starting to lose guys late in the season. And when you start losing them late in the season, you don't have as much time to adjust to those losses.
No, you don't. The Monday night game looks like a pretty good game. Falcons at the Saints. Obviously, both teams look like they're playoff bound. What does this game really mean?
Well, it means that it's Thursday, but Drew Brees has probably already thrown for 200 yards.
No kidding, huh?
And 305-2. Break Dan Marino's record,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, who knew if that was ever going to happen? But, it, you know, the thing about Drew is even more amazing is he only needs 220 yards to get the 5,000. Now, that's not the record, but Drew Brees becomes the first player in the history of this league to throw for 5,000 yards twice.
Right, that's true.
And there's a lot to be said for that. Although, if you saw something I sent out on Twitter about an hour or so ago, you know, people get very caught up in passing yards as a gauge. And I already know, obviously, that both Tom Brady and Drew have already reached the 4,500 mark, which is a pretty significant total,
right?
And so on. But a lot of yards doesn't add up to a lot of championships, okay? And I'm not saying that to be a buzzkill, but that's not the gauge you're looking for. You can throw for a lot of yards in this league, John, as you know, and it's not necessarily a gauge of success. Sometimes you throw for a lot of yards because you have a bad defense.
Right.
Or you're very one-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, now, obviously, I can't count Drew and Tom Brady this year, but the previous 22 times that a quarterback threw for 4,500 yards or more, none of those guys won a Super Bowl.
Zero.
Zero. In fact, only six of them got there, and all six lost the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Okay, so...
One of those was Brady in 08.
Well, the 07 season.
The 07
yes.
season, yeah.
Right. But obviously, the guy who threw was Dan Marino.
Mm-hmm.
They lost the Super Bowl to the 49ers by 22 points.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, Kurt Warner with the Cardinals is on that list. You know, you have to go down the most yards ever thrown by, I'm doing this right off the top of my head after looking at it an hour ago. Peyton Manning threw for 4,397, I believe, in 2006.
When they won?
Okay.
Yep.
That's the most by a Super Bowl champion.
Okay.
Now, of course, that 2006 team had a rookie, Joseph Addai. They also had Dominique Rhodes in the backfield. And, of course, if you remember the Super Bowl in the rain at Miami against Chicago, they ran their way to that championship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Remember, Peyton Manning... other than the Colts' comeback win over the Patriots in the playoffs, did not have a good postseason that year. He threw seven interceptions in four playoff games, which was two less than he threw during the regular season, I believe. So sometimes when you throw – listen, we've had this discussion 100 times on this show about piling up numbers and so on and so on. I hear a lot of people making a big deal about – listen, if three guys throw for 5,000 yards this year – we know two of them aren't winning the Super Bowl.
That's right. That's right. Just a matter of numbers.
That I can tell you for a fact.
Matter
people
of
aren't
numbers.
Winning it.
That's exactly
okay?
right.
And this could be the year. Listen, what we're seeing with the passing numbers this year, John, keep this in mind. I know I'm probably gushing a little about this topic, but it's we're really seeing some wild things happen here at the end of the year. We know that Rodgers has thrown for 40 touchdown passes. We know Drew Brees has 37. Tom Brady's got 35. Matthew Stafford has 33, by the way. Two games to go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, keep in mind that we've never had more than one player throw 40 touchdown passes in a season. Okay?
And that could happen with, yeah.
We could have had four guys do it in one year.
Four guys do it this year, yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Okay? We've never obviously had more than one guy throw for 5,000 yards in a season. We could have two or three.
Could have three. Could have three.
And it's just astounding what we're seeing. Like I said, we've already set a new record for 300-yard passing games. Like I said, we're going out with a bang here. And some of these quarterbacks, like I said, there's going to be a lot of heavy voting MVP-wise and Offensive Player of the Year-wise for Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and Aaron Rodgers.
No doubt. Well, that brings us then to the Dolphins and Patriots here on Saturday afternoon.
By the way, did I answer your question from 10 minutes ago after rambling on that?
I think you did, at least somewhat
sufficiently. Somewhere in there, I think I did.
Somewhere in there, it's in there. That's correct. Which I'm appreciative. Thank you. I like the history lesson. I'm fascinated by the history lesson. You know, the Miami team is certainly not the same team that the Patriots beat in week one of the season. Maybe that's a good thing for Miami. But the one thing that troubles me about this game, just looking at it from a New England perspective, is the fact that you're playing a team that's dangerous, that has absolutely nothing to lose, and got everything to play for, because you got coaches and players who are fighting for their jobs. And anytime you have a team like that, you need to make sure that you have their undivided attention.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And I think, unfortunately, when you also play the kind of defense that the Patriots have played this year, sadly, is that you're susceptible to anybody.
Sure you are.
And, you know, I don't know if you realize this, but if they give up, it's less than 400 net passing yards in the next two games. It combined in the last two games of the season. The Patriots are about to set a record for giving up the most passing yards in the season in the history of the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see what happened last week when they gave up, 167 yards rushing?
In the first quarter.
In the first quarter in the game against Denver. So defensively, they're obviously they have some major problems. And to me, even an ordinary offense, and I think the Dolphins' offense has obviously been more than ordinary as of late, an ordinary offense can feast on a substandard defense. The thing that's been astounding about, and listen, Matt Moore's done a great job taking over for Chad Henne and so on. This team's won five of their last seven games after being 0-7, so they've really flipped, you know, really flipped things here. Reggie Bush has run for over 100 yards three games in a row.
Right.
And had a double C note last week up at Buffalo. He's on the verge of a 1,000-yard rushing season.
Which he's never done before.
Well, I want to say he had one 100-yard game earlier in the year this year against the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in his 5 years with the Saints, he had
one
100-yard rushing game.
Yeah, I think that's right, yeah.
Okay, so he's gone from having 200-yard rushing games to three in a row. And I point that out because I, for one, never envisioned him as a workhorse running back. I think we all looked at him as a utility back, jack of all trades. I mean, how many times have you heard this year that Darren Sproles is a better Reggie Bush than Reggie Bush?
Yeah,
people
a lot.
Have been making that joke all year.
Right.
Well, you got to give credit where credit's due, and Reggie Bush is, you watch him run, he runs with a determination that a lot of people probably didn't think he had. I'm not saying he's not a determined player, but his running style was more to run away from you. Okay, because he had the outstanding speed and because he could turn the corner. He did that a lot in college. I think he found out in the pros that you can't necessarily turn the corner as fast as you can with the speed of these linebackers and defensive backs and even defensive ends who can hem you in and so on.
Sure.
So you're seeing, I think you've seen a change in how Reggie Bush has played professional football this year. And I really got to give hats off to him. I think he's as big a reason that their offense has turned things around as Matt Moore has.
Mm-hmm.
It really hasn't been Matt Moore to Brandon Marshall as this prolific passing duo. It's really been a balanced attack by the Dolphins ever since they, you know, finally got into the win column and so
sure,
on.
Sure.
But that being said, I mean, Tom Brady has carved us this defense up on more than one occasion. And for 517 yards on the Monday night, as we saw, even when Chad Henne was putting up over 400 yards that same night. And to me, the Patriots, for lack of an expression that gets used a lot, they have had their swagger back for about a month or so now. And I thought coming back the way they came back last week, even though it was only 9 points, they were in a, you know, in a stadium where traditionally they haven't played well, against a team that's won 6 in a row and a team that's, you know, jamming the ball down their throats, and they go from down by 9 to winning by 18.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for that. Mm-hmm. And again, I fully expect, I don't want to jump ahead here and so on. I fully expect the Patriots to, you know, to close out the year with a couple of wins here and wrap up home field advantage in the AFC.
Well, from your mouth to Patriots fans' ears, because I think that there are quite a few people that are somewhat optimistic that that will happen, if not somewhat complacent that that will happen. But I think that's just the way fans are when you're, you know, spoiled to winning, which is what Patriots fans largely are. And we're spoiled to your presence, Russell. I kept you overtime today, but I want you to know I appreciate that.
Oh, are you kidding? I was the one who did all the talking, but I love talking history, as you well know, and I appreciate you indulging me a little.
And I can listen to it. I can listen to it all the time. It's great stuff.
I just think what we're seeing here at the end of the year with this three-team horse race, and let's be honest, John, with the Packers losing last week,
yeah,
it has cast the shadow of a doubt on who now is going to win the Super Bowl. I don't think there's any question about it, because it wasn't the fact that they lost. I pointed out to somebody today, if they would have lost 38-35 to Kansas City, I think we would have shrugged it off.
Yeah, yeah.
But they lost 19-14.
Right.
Okay? And there was something different about that game because we saw Aaron Rodgers on the ground a lot.
Shades of New England against the Giants.
Well, listen.
I hate to bring that up, but
for all we talk about all these passing numbers and all this offense and all this quarterback-driven league, I point out one thing about last year, which, by the way, very unusual that we're actually going to see both Super Bowl teams back in the playoffs. It's the second year in a row. Remember, we went about 10 years where one or both didn't make it back to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Remember, Indy and New Orleans back last year. Now Pittsburgh and Green Bay are back last year. But I bring up those two teams for this reason. For all this pass-happy league and points and touchdowns and passing yards and quarterback-driven league, the team that gave up the fewest points in the league last year was Pittsburgh. The team that gave up the second fewest was Green Bay.
Wow.
The team that had the most sacks last year was Pittsburgh. The team tied for second was Green Bay.
Okay.
There's still said to be something to be said about making plays and playing defense. And as we have seen many times with high-scoring teams getting in Super Bowls and not being able to get the job done, there's three aspects to this game. It's maybe a quarterback-driven league, but there's a few engines and on the defensive side of the ball.
Sure, sure. Russell, happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you and your family. I look forward to visiting again next week when
it should be fun.
When we can wrap it up.
Your whole staff, as a matter of fact. Have a great holiday. And by the end of next week, in fact, I'm going to predict by next Sunday, I'll have all the playoff scenarios figured out.
Wow. That's
going to work overtime.
You're going out on a limb on that one, brother. Thank you. Appreciate that. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas, John. Have a great week.
You bet. Talk to you next week. That's Russell Baxter, ProFootballGuru.com. One of the best at knowing history and numbers and pertinent things and getting, you know, the story within the story. Guy's got a little bit of everything going on, as I'm sure many of fans of this particular website and this particular show have realized, as he's been a regular guest of ours on Thursdays for several years now. Let me do a little bit of due diligence here in getting in some of these email grievances in, just because we solicited them. This one comes from Dave, Major Dave, who says, John, I'm guessing a great deal of the silence from the fans is the lambasting we continually take from the ESPN NFL Network analysts who harp that we're horrible and are determined to be one-and-done playoff team. So many of us are patiently waiting for all the naysayers to be proven wrong. I will say that every week I find myself yelling at the defense to just stop them for crying out loud, and I truly hope we make some progress in the draft this year to help shore up the defense. Thanks for the great show and commentary. You make the afternoons enjoyable as we listen to your show. Have a great Christmas. Thank you, Dave. G4, driver in Georgia. I love the Festivus theme today. I have to admit that as I was participating in the Feats of Strength competition, I heard your bitching and moaning about Patriots and fans and that I have a problem with you people. I've been a Patriots fan since 72, having lived through the dog days of Patriot fandom. I have to say that I love the success we've had recently. Please don't lump us all together with the pink hat Patriot fans. There's the pink hat phrase. Love that one, right? I love the fact that we've been AFC East champs 9 of the past 10. I lived and died with some of the stinko years we've had from the toilet bowl game with Baltimore in 84 to see who would win two games that season, to Steve Grogan sitting on his helmet with his head between his hands. From the blowout bowl to the Bears in 85 to Jim Plunkett sucking with us and setting records with the Raiders. So in short, I'm a fan and have been celebrating the AFC East champions for 5 straight days. Don't think we are all not appreciative, Mr. Grinch. I like that.
I still say, I would if we could go back in time for the butterfly effect, not that they would have won, but if Len Dawson doesn't go down in that play and Stanley catches that touchdown pass like he should have, and the Patriots go up 7-0 instead of 3-0, I just wonder what would have happened. Could have been interesting. And people say, yeah, they would have lost 34-10 instead of 46-10.
No question.
But, I mean, remember when Dawson went down? I felt like somebody had punched me in the gut. And, you know, people don't remember that in 85 because he didn't have flashy numbers. But he was a big part of that team when he went down. And then Stanley dropping the touchdown pass and never drops anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Damn it. I brought my pole for Festivus.
Yeah, there you go. I like it. All right, I know you've got B-Lo coming in, right, for a little fantasy stuff?
Yeah, it's a huge fantasy week. Again, I think a lot of people are in the championship week. This is probably the biggest week of the year for fantasy, this week and next week. I think this week is probably the biggest one. So.
Playoffs, okay, good.
Yeah, get that. And then, 5 o'clock we'll do more about the, Patriots in Miami and a couple of Christmas tidbits, holiday stuff, boy, a little fun questionnaire type stuff.
Good.
What's your favorite Christmas cartoon? Favorite Christmas cartoon character?
I know mine.
That kind of silly stuff.
I know
yours?
Mine. Yeah, I definitely know mine. I'm a huge fan of Charlie Brown, so
yeah.
I definitely like Charlie Brown. But I am particularly soft spot for the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer claymation. I'm a big fan of Hermie the Dentist.
Oh, Hermie's great. I mean, that's classic. Nobody wants a Charlie in the box. That's one of the great lines of all time.
Charlie in the box.
I also like, right. I think one of the classic lines ever in cartoon, Christmas cartoon history is when Heatmiser Snez says about snow, what's the tutti frutti snow cone want now? Like it sounded like Paul Lynde, talking to Hollywood.
That is good. That's good. All right, Pete's coming up shortly. Margo says this on Facebook. I hear your grievance about Pats fans showing complacency for winning the division again because of what's happened the past two postseasons. The fact that the last time the Pats won a postseason game was the Chargers in 07 is disheartening, but it shouldn't undermine what this franchise has accomplished. I agree that we as fans should be more grateful for the success we've had. My husband is a Bills fan. They haven't even been to the playoffs for 11 seasons. What the hell are we complaining about? ESPN and NFL Network harp on the Pats' playoff drought because majority of football fans love to hear about it. But in the grand scheme of things, it means nothing. That's good. And then Chris says, all right, the NFL receivers are so spoiled and overly protected by the NFL, I don't remember seeing defensive pass interference called so many times in one season. That's true. It's because they've geared the game to offense. Finally, I think Chris is starting to get it here. This is an offensive league. Teams have had to become offensive because of the rule changes. The NFL knows what they're doing. They know that you, as fans, like to see points. You like to see yards. You like to see quarterbacks slinging it. You like to see receivers laying out for it. You like to see the scoreboard light up like, a bingo board. That's what you like to see. And that's why the NFL has taken the game that direction. So the next time I hear somebody say, well, defense wins championships, bull!
I got a great article. I can tell you what it is, but a great article. Finally, somebody who's come around a little bit, and I'm not going to say who it is or what site they're on because I want to read it on the air during the show. But it's very, very interesting. So exactly what you just said.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Yep. This is what we live in. This is what we have nowadays.
They want arena football.
This is the NFL.
They want arena football.
They want arena football. You got it.
Yeah. For now. I mean, sports is cyclical. We all know that.
And defenses will eventually catch up. They always do.
Always do. It always happens.
They
but right now,
do.
Don't talk to me about defenses winning championships because this team cannot and will not be stopped at home. I promise you that. They will not be stopped
at
home.
Which is why home field advantage is hugely important.
Yep. And I know over the last 11, 12 years that the number one seed has only gone to the Super Bowl four times, and the Patriots certainly were part of that, going twice as a number two.
Right.
And they've also gone as a number one, but they've gone, I think, twice as a number two. So, but every year is different.
Hugely
important. I'll take it.
No question. All right. Pete's coming up next. My thanks to Russell, obviously, and to Andy Kent from Dolphins.com. My thanks to Kevin for manning the controls. Merry Christmas to each and every one of you Patriot fans. Pete, I know you'll have an outstanding Christmas.
Go Friars tomorrow night.
Thank you very much.
Kick Rhodey's ass.
Thank you. We'll try. Like, I have a lot to do with it, but attaboy. Spoken like a true Rhode Islander. Love that one.
I can't stand you. Are I can't stand it. It's just something that's been, you know. My dad was a Providence guy. I grew up at Civic Center. Since
you're a
I was
Providence fan.
6 years old.
That's what rivalry is all about.
You know, and I still don't forgive that dumbass for getting off the wrong bus. It should have went to Providence and not URI. What's his
Sly
name?
Williams.
Sly Williams. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah.
Somebody should write a book about that.
Somebody has. I think.
I know. An up to date one.
Exactly. There you go. Up to date one. Merry Christmas, everybody. Pats Fins on Christmas Eve here at Gillette. And then guess what? We'll recap it all for you. Same Pats time, same Pats channel next week.
No game. I play it hard. Kicked around, cause stiff stand scarred. I take the hit, but not the ball.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.